I'm Austin Lugo.
I'm Brendan Hess.
And this is the Nom Nom Project. Before we get started today, just a quick announcement. As recently announced, we were planning on traveling to Vietnam in June. Those plans, due to COVID and Omicron and everything that's going on in the world, have been suspended for the time being. We are not sure at this time when we will be traveling to Vietnam. The trip will happen at some point in time, but whether that be later this summer, this fall, this winter, next year, we really can't be sure about. But it is going to happen at some point. We promise you. I know we keep pushing it back, but we are going to go to Vietnam. It is going to happen. It's going to be very exciting. But until then, we're going to provide quality content. Season 2 of the Nom Nom Project will be starting some point soon. Who knows when? Still not entirely planned. But don't fret, our loyal listeners. Great things are happening, right, Bran?
Almost certainly, yes.
All right, Brandon, this first question is for you. What is the Jiong Festival?
The Jiong Festival is a harvest festival. It's commemorating Saint Jiong, which is one of the deities of Vietnamese mythology. He's kind of like Apollo in Roman mythology, I think, is the god of harvests. And so the festival happens at the beginning of spring, and it's essentially like a good luck festival. People come together, and they celebrate a hope for abundant harvest for the year.
And when does this festival usually happen?
So it's on the Chinese calendar, or the lunar calendar, and it starts on the 6th day of the lunar calendar. It goes for 2 days all the way up to the 8th.
The 6th day of the first month?
Yep.
I believe that's February. I think the lunar calendar typically starts in February. So early February-ish is when. And this harvest festival, I mean, I'm sure there's rice, but what are they harvesting in Vietnam?
Whatever you would grow in Vietnam. Coffee, plantains, bananas. I'm actually not sure what else Vietnam grows. Have we ever talked about that?
I don't know. Future question. What are the things grown? I mean, I know they grow a lot of rice. They grow a lot of coffee, but otherwise, I think they do something with textiles.
Silk.
Yes, silk. They have a lot of silk there.
Do you grow silk? Because it's in worms.
They farm worms. I don't know.
You farm, like, tuna fish at a fish farm. I guess you do.
Yes. You farm a cow.
But you don't grow cows.
But cows grow.
They certainly do. I'm not sure if the Jiong Festival specifies between different agricultural products. But what I do know is that a lot of incense is burned, as per most Vietnamese festivals. And I think for most people, it's really just a time to get together with family and enjoy some quality time together.
And in cities like Ho Chi Minh and Hanoi, do they have any sort of festivities that take place? Like any sort of outdoor parades or anything like that?
It seems to be the kind of thing where you'll put like a sign up on your shop window, like Happy Jiong Festival. Or you'll get one of those like plastic window stickers that's like, you know, a depiction of Saint Jiong. Typically, most of the celebrations are held at two temples in Vietnam. One is the Sok Temple. I think that's the one that's in Sok Son District. But I think that's up in northern Vietnam. And then the other one's at Phu Dong Temple, somewhere in southern Vietnam. And interestingly, the one at Phu Dong Temple actually happens later. You could say that the Jiong Festival actually goes from the 6th to the 9th, because there's different celebrations in different part of the country.
Fascinating. That sounds like a very interesting day. So I guess it's sort of like an American Memorial Day in the sense that it's more of a personal holiday than it's not so much like there's a bunch of parades and stuff. It's more of kind of just chilling with the fam.
There's not a really good parallel because there aren't really folk traditions in American society.
That haven't been destroyed.
Yeah. So it's the sort of holiday that, like, if you're living around the temple, you're very likely to attend the celebrations and do stuff. But if you're living in Ho Chi Minh City, you're probably like, oh, today's the Jiong Festival Day. And then you just, like, it's on your Google Calendar. And you say that to your coworkers before you begin your workday or whatever.
Gotcha. All right. The next question is for me. And Brandon, you asked, what are some major population centers besides Hanoi and Saigon. Now, of course, as we talked about before, much of Vietnam is a rural population. Over 66% of the population of Vietnam live in rural communities, so there are not a lot of big cities. But one of the biggest cities in Vietnam, and used to actually be the biggest city in Vietnam, is called Da Nang. Da Nang is actually a very important city to the history of Vietnam. Way back in around 1000 BCE, this kingdom used to be ruled by a people known as the Kham, I believe is how you pronounce the name of the people. It was this Kham kingdom, and their kingdom was built around shipping and ports. So Da Nang is a port city. It's based right off of the eastern side of Vietnam near the ocean. And so it was a trade route with Japan and China at the time. So it created a shit ton of wealth for this little kingdom. And this kingdom's like, we're so wealthy, we're doing so great off, we're gonna take over the rest of Vietnam. You know, classic move of any empire. You make a little money, you're feeling good, you decide, we're gonna take over more land, more places. Alexander Great did it, Julius Caesar did it, they all do it. It's just what you do when you're an empire. And so they attack the original people of Vietnam, which are the Dai Viet, or Viet Dai, depending on your translation. And the Dai Viet are ferocious fighters and brutally push back the empire. And the empire is like, damn, that's not great. But the Dai Viet's pissed because they're like, you entrenched on our land. So the Dai Viet end up taking over the port and annihilating the kingdom. So the kingdom basically ends. I wouldn't say it's a genocide necessarily, but they basically, you know, classic, you attack our land, we attack your land and kill all your people and, you know, that sort of thing. So then the Dai Viet take over Da Nang. It becomes a center for ancient Vietnam because it's a port city. It brings a lot of wealth into the city. And a couple of thousand years go by. They're doing great. Vietnam continues to grow as a country. The French come in. They're like, we want to colonize because that's what they do. And the Vietnamese people are like, no, we don't want you to colonize our country because that's our thing. And so their entry point into Vietnam was actually Da Nang, because once they took over Da Nang, which they did pretty quickly, you've basically economically strangled Vietnam because so many of their imports and exports come from the city. Once you control that one city, the entire economy of Vietnam collapses, which is how France was able to so quickly take over the rest of Vietnam. Is because their entire economic industry is built on one city, which isn't the best way to build a country.
So what you're saying is Da Nang is like the Vietnamese spice melange.
Pretty much. It's basically the city where everything takes place. Every time there's any sort of war, any sort of colonization, this is the city that's taken over. Once the French leave, or rather are thrown out during the American War, as they call it in Vietnam, or Vietnam War, as we call it in the U.S., it became the most popular port in the entire world. It had over 2,000 planes flying in a day for well over 4 years. For, again, the very obvious reasons that strategically, if you have Da Nang, you basically have Vietnam. Today, Da Nang is still the number one port city in Vietnam because of a lot of different reasons. It's not as valuable as it used to be because you can transfer by plane and helicopter and drones, I guess. I don't know how people are exporting and importing things. But there are other options, so it's not as important. So Brandon, if you want to take over Vietnam, Da Nang might not be the way to go in the modern 21st century, but it's still an incredibly important port. And even though it's not nearly as big as Ho Chi Minh City with 3.5 million people, or Hanoi with 1.5 million people, it still has a population of 780-ish thousand people, making it by far the biggest population outside the two big cities, because I think the next biggest city is somewhere around 500 or 400,000 people.
Fascinating. I'm not used to cities being so small. My American brain is used to, like, a city's 2 million people minimal. Fascinating, though. So going off of that, Haiphong is similarly a port city. much more significant today than Danang is, mostly because it's essentially like the most modern port city in Vietnam. In a lot of ways, it's like the Chicago of Vietnam, because it's a major industrial hub and a large population center, but not like culturally at the forefront as like an American New York or Los Angeles is. You know, Haiphong is mostly popular to non-locals as a tourist city because of its proximity to an island by the name of Cat Ba Island, which is like this beautiful, unique biosphere that's like one of a kind on the planet. And there's a lot of resorts in that area. That picture that's on our website of the Life Through Fictions production, when you click on Nom Nom Project, that picture of like the port, like resort thing with the mountains over the water, that's in Cat Ba Island. And there's a lot of other stuff in Haiphong. I think there's a lot of high-end hotels, and the history of Haiphong is that it was kind of a small village until the French colonized, and then they turned it into like a port city or a trade hub for northern Vietnam when they tried to take over the place. So as a result, there's like a lot of colonial architecture and colonial money that was injected into the city at the time. And so now it's very historic, and there's a lot of like beautiful like colonial style parks and residential districts and stuff like that.
So then is this city very much a city of the late 18th, early 19th century, in the sense that a lot of the architecture and buildings and city design is very much influenced by the colonization of France? It seems you're describing a city that before the French colonized it was sort of a small village. Is that correct?
Essentially, I think there was some trading being done there, but it wasn't like an industrial port like it is now. So there's some parts of it that are like colonial. A lot of it's modernized now, because when the communists took over, they essentially changed out pretty much all of the buildings in Vietnam, from what I understand. There was a strong modernization effort back in like the 80s. So there's some historical parts, but a lot of it's just generic Vietnamese style now.
And so you kind of describe the city as similar to Chicago. In what ways does it parallel the United States Chicago?
Well, it's mostly a port city, in the way that Chicago is like the Great Lakes port city and the Mississippi port city. Wait, is that the river? Yeah. And most of what is done in Haiphong that makes it important for the Vietnamese economy is that there's a lot of shipping and like shipping related industry there. It's not what you think about Chicago doing, but that's technically why the city's so big right now.
Interesting. I remember reading this sort of battle between Danang and Haiphong in the, I want to say the 1980s, but that could be entirely off. I could be off by decades. So don't quote me on this, but I know for a time Haiphong took over as the number one import-export port in Vietnam, and they had this sort of back and forth that eventually led to a bit of violence by basically local gangsters. Like, these cities would hire criminals, quote unquote. They'd hire some muscle to go to the opposite port and basically start destroying ports, which isn't the best way to function, especially when you're part of the same country. It's
This is why Vietnam needs football, all right? Americans had the same problem until they invented football.
Just get all the aggression out, throwing a piece of pig. That's what Vietnam needs. Once they have some flying pigs, then they will not be attacking. I mean, it stopped. They're not attacking. Well, I guess I don't know. I guess they could still be, you know, underground Soprano style sending hits via, I don't know, killing fishermen or something. It's kind of awesome, and it's kind of equally ridiculous, which makes it all the more awesome.
It is very cool. It's probably the coolest thing I've heard Vietnam doing so far. Is there any, like, film or, like, any movies that have been written about this? Any Sopranos-style TV shows?
There's got to be at least some literature. Like, at least some good kind of, like, books kind of the 50s and 60s era. I mean, it's just so spectacular and absurd that there has to be some. There has to be. There can't just be. Like, how do you not dig that well and not like drink from that well? How do you not? You have to.
Well, if anyone from Vietnam is listening to this and happens to live in Haiphong, please send us all of the underground films. All of the underground anti-Da Nang propaganda.
All right, moving on. Our last question for this week is for me, myself, and it is, what is the Doson Festival? Now, in my very humble opinion, of the dozens and dozens of Vietnamese festivals, which are all pretty incredible. I mean, sometimes you're walking up a mountain. Sometimes you're smelling incense across the entire country. Sometimes you're celebrating via giant dragons. I mean, there's a lot of cool holidays when it comes to Vietnam. Like, Vietnam knows how to celebrate right. I would say top five countries of knowing how to celebrate festivals. They get it. They get it in a way no one does. But I would argue the Da Son Festival is the coolest and most badass of all of the festivals. So as the story goes, way back in ancient Vietnam, there was this terrible drought, and everyone was sad and miserable, and no one had any food because, you know, drought. And so the Vietnamese people pray to a water deity, and they say, hey, like, this drought, it's not cool. We would like if there wasn't a drought anymore, because, you know, droughts are bad. And they're waiting, and this one villager wanders up to the sea, and upon this wave, he sees two buffalo fighting each other. And lo and behold, within the next 24 hours, it starts to rain again. The drought is over. Wonderful harvest. Everyone's happy. Everyone's like, wow, this is awesome. This is great. We love this. This is awesome. And of course, this was witnessed in the city of Da Son. And so since that time, to celebrate the rains that come each year, they have something called the Da Son Buffalo Fighting Festival. So the way the festival works is, a couple of months before the festival, people from across Vietnam bring their buffalo to a judging committee of sorts. And the judging committee picks out the top 20-ish buffalo. And then for the next 3 months, these buffalo are trained to be professional fighters. Kind of the way you would train a horse in a race. It's not like bullfighting at all. It's actually very technical, and there's a lot of nuance in it, especially because in these festivals, it's not bulls fighting quote-unquote people, it's buffalo fighting other buffalo. So you're training your buffalo to fight, you're showing them different techniques, different ways of attacking other buffalo. And come the day of the Da Son Festival, they create a bracket system, kind of like March Madness here in the United States, but instead of basketball, you have buffalo, and you bring your buffalo in, the other farmer brings their buffalo in, and then they fight. And via a judge, they decide who the winner of the fight is. It's not when one of the buffalo dies. Neither of the buffalo die during the fight. It's just a fight that goes on for a couple of minutes. And then a judge says, this one has won this round. And if the buffalo wins the round, they move on to the next round. And this fighting basically goes on all day, where buffalo are just beating the shit out of other buffalo. Which sounds cruel. I mean, I can see how it... Perhaps it's not the most pleasant event, especially if you are a vegan or if you work for PETA. You're probably not really into buffalo fighting, but the fights aren't violent. It's not like a dog fight, right? It's not something where these animals are tearing each other apart. It's more of a fight you would see between two rams when they kind of butt heads. So it's more of a fight of strength and power, and these buffalo are not trying to kill each other. They're not trained to kill each other. If one of them dies on the field, it is completely by accident. It's more of something that buffalo do in the wild anyways, and it's a way to show dominance, not a way to create any sort of pain between any other buffalo. But once all of the matches have gone through, the final buffalo is announced, the holiest of buffalo for the year. The owner of the buffalo gets a reward, $2,000 American, which seems pretty nice for having a buffalo. I mean, I don't know how much it costs to keep up a buffalo, but it's more about the prestige of having that buffalo. Like, for the next year, everyone knows that you're the guy who had the buffalo. It's kind of like if you won the Kentucky Derby. Everyone's like, that's the guy that won the Kentucky Derby. Like, it's a pretty big deal. But unlike the Kentucky Derby, the moment the final buffalo wins, they slaughter it, along with all the other buffalo. They slaughter all of the buffalo that competed that day. And it is considered good luck if you eat any of the buffalo that have won in the competition. So it's a very high price to eat a buffalo that's won, because it's sort of this good luck charm of sorts. But I mean, honestly, this festival sounds super badass. First of all, you're watching buffalo go at it. You get to eat some delicious buffalo meat. You get to party with your homies. You get to chill on a beach. I really don't see the downside of this festival. I mean, it just seems like an incredible time. I hope that one day I get to experience the Death Sun Festival, because it's just badass in all of the ways.
I'm going to be so sad when we discover that we're going to miss every single festival in Vietnam whenever we travel there.
It'll be like the 1 week, or the only 2 weeks in all of Vietnam that they don't have a festival.
But this one does sound very fun. Any festival that takes place on or near a beach, I think, automatically gets bonus points.
All right, y'all. We are out of questions for the week. Our next questions will be held up until next week, which we're very excited for. We're going to talk about water deities. We're going to talk about True Toy. A lot of exciting things. Yeah. And other things that we don't yet know, but I'm sure will be very exciting. Brandon, do you have any final thoughts? Any final things you want to say about the incredible country of Vietnam?
Keep on keeping on.
All right, y'all. Thank you for listening. You can find this podcast wherever you hear podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at The Nom Nom Project. And you can find anything that I do at AustinLugo12.
You can find anything I do at really anything connected to my three fictions. My fingers are in all the pies.
And for exclusive content, early access, go to patreon.com/lifethroughfiction. That's patreon.com/lifethroughfiction. And thank you all for listening.